This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Hey, Tiger fans. You know what's more frustrating than a bases-loaded double play? When your small business is striking out with technology problems. That's why our good buddy, Brett Danis, created Summit Tech Partners. Brett's a Michigan guy through and through and a lifelong Tigers fan. And Summit provides the perfect relief pitcher for your IT needs. While other services throw you generic fastballs, Brett's team will scout your business and develop a customized game plan specifically for your small business.
While you're keeping track of ERA and RBIs, Brett's team will handle your IT infrastructure. His team will monitor your systems like a hawk-eyed umpire, catching problems before they become major league disasters. Summit has a full roster of IT services that'll keep your business safe and running smoothly, so you can spend less time troubleshooting and more time watching torque bombs.
Visit homerun.support today for your free consultation.
Summit Tech Partners, where your small business is always the MVP.
You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast, with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
The bullpen, as great as they were in Game 1, let us down in Game 2.
Tommy Canley's implosion was heartbreaking.
In advance of our trade deadline primer, I just had done a little research and came up with 5 names.
Take all those hot dogs, pile them up on a table in front of you with bun, and say, I'm putting all that in me.
Litterbox listeners, Tigers fans, it's your co-host, Billy P. from the D, with my always handsome and svelte divine co-host Chet West.
Oh my.
And this is not going to be the most pleasant of pods for us to discuss, because the Tigers literally gave a game away, and I love what's going on this season. I think we all do, but the Tigers haven't given anything away this year. They've earned everything they can get, and I'm going to give you just the quick brass tacks. They were rained out Tuesday night, which seems to be a growing trend, not only with the Tigers, but around Major League Baseball. They did end up winning the first of 2-11-2, and it was about as perfect as a game as you could hope for. It was a bullpen game. Everybody got hits, and I'll get into the superlatives in a minute. What followed up in the nightcap was nothing short of a nightmare. The Tigers were winning. They had put 4 runs on the board. They were comfortably in control of this game, and the bullpen, as great as they were in Game 1, let us down in Game 2, and the Tigers ended up losing 4-9. And then hopes were very, very high for our favorite Korean reclamation project, Central Michigan alum Dietrich Enns, but there's probably a reason he is 34 years old and hasn't been called up to the bigs. The Tigers ended up losing yesterday 11-7, and as we tried to give you some pretense on this, James Woods went off yesterday and had a 5-hit game. Chet and I, you know, let our listeners know that we thought that might be coming. We hoped it wouldn't. But when the Tigers can't roll out either healthy arms or arms that can generate either swing and miss or ground ball or fly ball outs, it's going to be a problem. And I, for one, am very, very frustrated with the pitching staff, both starting and bullpen, aside from you, Tarek Skubal, you know, who I know is listening right now, you know, as he's warming up. up. That being said, Chet, I want to get your thoughts because I feel like the Bats did enough in this series to get a series win. A sweep's on the road's probably out of the question. The Nationals are showing some life. Clearly, Woods is the goods. That's going to be our catchphrase here. And I just want to know what you're thinking because my frustration is at a 9.5 out of 10 with what's going on in the pitching and lack of pitching availability to the Detroit Tigers at this point.
I want to say that we warned everybody. We've talked about this leading up to these games. This past three-game set had nothing to do with the offense. The offense was perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Even in a game where they had to go up against Mackenzie Gore and show their wares, they put four runs across the plate that should make you competitive. Our pitching has become such a concern that when Tarek Skubal is not on the hill, I worry. Actually, you know what? I'll throw Mize in there, too. Mize has been lovely. He's been perfectly fine.
Okay. I think that's fair.
I'm perfectly fine with a Mize start. You know, Skubal and Mize, outside of that, we're starting the likes of Dietrich Enns, which, look, we loved his story in his first start last week when he went five innings. I think they scratched a run or two across on him or something. I don't even remember because it was last week, and we don't care about last week. We care about this week. This week, he gave up eight runs, six of them or five of them in the first inning, I believe it was. A disgusting start. This week, we see in game one, what happens when a pitching staff falls apart early in the first inning with Trevor Williams in game one for the Nationals giving up six runs? Our bullpen game, nobody's under pressure then, right?
No.
Nobody's under pressure to perform then. Tyler Holton can come out, peacock all over the mound all he wants for two innings. Gave up a hit, three Ks. Brant Herter, four hits, one run, five Ks, 2.2 innings. And Tyler Owens didn't have to do much over his inning. He gave up a run. Like you said earlier, I think during the game you texted and said, I don't know if this guy's ready. Probably isn't. He's probably up there out of necessity to some degree due to the injuries. And then Dylan Smith goes 3.1 innings with two hits and two walks and no Ks, but 3.1 innings from your reliever, Dylan Smith. Good job, Dylan Smith. That's a great way to close out the game, but you also had a massive lead. It was 11-2 game at that point. So I look at this, these early runs are absolute, they're death. You can't have that. And we saw how it helped us in one game, and we saw how it killed us in the other games. And it's just too much. You can't give up that much. And when we don't have surefire pitching, we don't have starters out there that we can rely on, that becomes problematic.
Yes. Can I give you just my game one notes? Because I took pretty copious notes that day.
Give me what you have from game one. I'd love
number
to hear
one,
your thoughts.
Riley Green and Z-Mac hugged in the dugout in the first inning, and it genuinely looked like these guys just like playing with each other. Last pod, we talked about Javier and Gleybar sitting next to each other, talking like the true students and veterans of the game that they are. And I just thought that was a cool moment for listeners that saw it. Then Green goes out, hits a three-run dong on a full count. He has a three-game home run streak at the point. Torres made him work, but just before that, in the second at bat with a walk, he is just such a professional hitter. I just can't say it enough. And then our guy, number 34, the backup catcher, the mustache, comes in and hits a three-run Oppo Taco. What I did not know about him is that with runners in scoring position, he has a 333 batting average.
I saw that. Isn't that odd?
His OPS is well above 1,000. So he has money when runners are in scoring position, which again leads me to the question, why wouldn't Hinch and the staff play Dingler most of the time and bring in our guy, the mustache,
the Oppo Taco Mustachio,
Rogers, Jake, that is your pinch hitter deluxe, but I don't know. The
other
thing that really
would you really want Jake Rogers pinch hitting though in key situation? I mean, I get it that he has a high average of throwing scoring positions right now, but is that a little bit of that could be luck or situational? I mean, how many times has he had to perform with runners in scoring
all
position?
All right, next pod, I'll do a deeper dive on that.
Please
I did have two yikes for the game, and that was Trey Sweeney with runners in scoring position is awful. He is 208.
He's back up. I mean,
and he's a 621 OPS, which is just terrible. And then you mentioned Williams. He threw 52 pitches to 11 batters in the first inning, and that was the game. The Tigers had the game thereafter. A couple stats coming out of that game. The Tigers had only walked 2.88 batters per game, which was good for six in Major League Baseball. Their ERA was 3.44, which was third. And then their average and OPS combined against other franchises was fifth. So you can see the pitching's been really, really strong this year. And also the hitting's been really, really strong in terms of, and excuse me, what I meant was their average and OPS average is fifth in baseball. So they're a really well-balanced team, and I feel like we're going to be a little nitpicky, but if I can head into game two, they had that game well in control, and it was just a classic bullpen blow-up, and it was...
Yeah, it was.
I was at the Cubs game that night, so I only watched the replay. Did you watch it in real time? And if
I did not watch this in real time as we were out doing some celebrating. It's the 4th of July around here is like a 3-day holiday for the most part. My mother's birthday, yada, yada, yada. Things get crazy. I did not watch, but I was watching it on the MLB app as it was coming through, and I was kind of doing a double take. I couldn't believe Tommy Canley's implosion was heartbreaking. First of all, because Canley has been pretty good for us this year.
I'm not coming down on Canley.
I am.
Well, hold on. What I'm coming down on is Canley's remaining body hair, because I guarantee it's gone at this point.
It's got to be. I mean, he went.
I wonder if he still has eyebrows.
He gave up 18 pitches.
That took you a minute.
This guy threw 18 pitches, gave up 4 hits, 5 runs. And a walk in 18 pitches. How does one do that? I mean, you're hittable at that point.
Well, my point is he didn't have it after 5 pitches or 6 pitches. So why was he allowed to be left in? He didn't have it that day. And that's where my frustration comes in, is that I think AJ Hinch and the pitching staff and coaching staff is pulling every lever they can. I think Scott Harris in the front office needs to get more help for these guys.
Well, the saddest thing is it's right off of him coming back in the game, because Flaherty had a rough start again, gave up 2 runs in the first inning, gave up another run in the third. Then we came back 4th through 7th inning and tacked 4 runs on the board and had him 4-3 going into the 8th. And then Canley just comes in and implodes after we make that comeback. So it's a game we probably shouldn't have won due to our starter again. But it's a game we could have ended up winning if our reliever, our setup guy, doesn't absolutely implode in front of everybody.
I guess, yeah, I can come down on Canley for this game, but I guess what I was trying to say is his good out this season has far outweighed the bad, but he had no command whatsoever from the replays I saw.
No.
And again, this comes back to my point. They need reinforcements, and clearly they're not there at Toledo, meaning we've mined that. But why wasn't, I have a question for you. Why wasn't Montero nowhere to be seen?
You know, it's odd that he's not back up. He's still down there, AAA, and I'm wondering if they're just saving him for another series. I don't know.
Well, have you seen this weekend series? There. It took forever for the Tigers to announce pitchers.
Well, we've got Olson tonight in game one, and then we've got Mize tomorrow in game two. Do we have a game three? Is Scooble on slate for game
with
3?
With an extra day of rest, which...
That's as good as we can get right now. Reese, Mize, Scooble. And we don't know what Reese is going to give us tonight.
I know, but...
After he's come back from his blister.
Preview, Tigers listeners, we're in Cleveland, and it's going to be a big set. 3-game set against Guardians, or Indians, as my across-the-street neighbor. He refuses to address them as the Guardians. And his reason's very found. I thought you'd like this, or very sound, I should say.
Okay.
Their initial name was the Cleveland Spiders. So if you were going to be under pressure to change the name from Indians, which I think we can all agree that was...
Why not go back to the Spiders? That would be kind of fun.
And what a cool logo. It's kind of scary, like the devil rays to small kids and all that, you know, arachnophobes. And for whatever reason, they decided to be the Guardians, which quite frankly sounds like an XFL team or a Major League Soccer team.
I don't like it. I never Guardians, liked it.
Yeah, Guadalajara Guardians.
They didn't have to keep the Indians for me. They could change it. I get it. But like, why could the Guardians? Seems you're reaching a lot there. I want to wrap up. I want to wrap up this Nationals, my thoughts on this National Series and looking forward. The pitching has started to become the wart. We need to get more pitching. We will not last in the postseason against good teams with the pitching we've got. We may not be able to keep our huge spread of games right now in the AL Central if we don't do something about our pitching. At this point in time, we are ham and egging it, and we need 2 to 3, let's say 3 bona fide starters to go down the stretch with. Now, if Reese can stay healthy, if Mize can stay healthy, if Scooble can stay healthy, I feel better. I'd love to have another guy to throw in there in that fourth or fifth spot. And then you can throw Gibson Long, Montero, whoever you want out there to dangle as that fifth guy. I'm fine with having a fifth guy who's questionable, but you got to have 3 surefire starters, a fourth guy who looks like a starter. Okay. Fifth guy can be the circus act. I don't care. We need that for the postseason run. I was looking at last year's postseason. It's unbelievable that the Dodgers started Flaherty twice. He had one good game, one bad game. And guess who gave up a good chunk of runs in that World Series last year for the Yankees in a relief spot? Your guy, Canley. So gave up 2 in the fifth game, which were like the deciding runs in that very close game late in the game. So I looked at that. I looked at what he did the other day, and I look at Canley and I said, oh gosh, we need bullpen help. We need a starter. We need bullpen help. Otherwise, we're going to really be rolling the dice down the stretch. And I don't see us beating anybody very good down the stretch if we don't have more reinforcements in the pitching.
And in case our listeners haven't been watching, the Astros, since the Tigers wrapped up that series with them, have been the best team in the American League, better than the Tigers. And I think this Astros team's better than last year's Astro team. The starting pitching's superior. Their bullpen's pretty, pretty solid. And they're getting offense where they need it. Now, mind you, they're coming off a series against the Rockies where everybody looks good. But previous to that, they've really put some distance between themselves and the rest of the division. And I would argue their division's far stronger than the AL Central. I do think Jeff Passan, again, I'm apologizing twice, Jeff. I think he had it right after 6 games. This division outside of the Tigers isn't looking like anything special whatsoever. It looks like Kansas City needs 2 to 3 more starting pitchers. It looks like, you know, they also need, God, probably 6 more hitters, maybe 5.
Bobby Witt Jr. can't do it all on his own.
No, and unfortunately, their amazing catcher, Salvi, he's just getting up there. And, you know, we'll talk more about them when we face them again.
I just think we're going to need more. We need more arms down the stretch on all fronts. And the problem is every other team competing right now
needs
starters and bullpen. So we're going to be competing for those things. We might have to give somebody up. We don't want to give up. I don't need a bat right now. I like our offense where it is.
No, that's kind of why I tried to bring up the statistics that as good as they've played, the offense really hasn't been the problem, despite having some of those, as we would consider them, cold games or where the bats are cool. So what other thoughts do you have on game 3, Chet?
The last of my thoughts center around the fact that our offense did their job that day. Most of this series, the offense looked great. I had really no problems with them. They had a little stumble in game 2, but nothing that I'm going to call out. I mean, it was Mackenzie Gore, so you knew that one was going to be a little slow on the offensive side of things. Jake Irvin even proved to be a challenge in game 3. We said Gore and Irvin weren't going to be pushovers.
I know.
And Trevor Williams was going to be horrible, and that's exactly what happened. Listen to us, folks. We know these things. I kid. We're right about 40% of the time. But I also said James Wood would torch us. CJ Abrams would have a good series. They both did. I think the Nationals are a better lineup than they probably get some credit for. They've got some talent in there. They're like the A's. They have some talent. Their pitching is rough, and we beat their pitching up. Our pitching was just worse. I'm ready to move along. I don't want to talk about the National Series anymore. It was kind of miserable. And I actually did look at that ballpark a lot during the series, during the games that I did watch. And I was like, yeah, it looks like kind of a miserable place. I don't think I really want to visit.
So the Guardians are on deck. We've got Reese Olson on the bump. He's 4-3 with a 2.96 ERA. And he is going up against possibly the best name I think we've faced all season. And that is Slade Cicconi, number 44. He is a right-hander, 6'4", 219, 26 years of age. He's 3-3, 3.64 ERA. He's pitched 42 innings with a strikeout per inning, 42, and his whip's 1.31. So actually, I think tonight's going to be a pretty fun game for...
I think he's gettable.
I do too.
I think he is gettable. I'm worried about Gavin Williams. He's been pretty good so far. I think we get him in game two, if I'm not mistaken, or is it
what
three?
I'm seeing right now is Casey Mize, who's 8-2, 3.6 ERA, 69 Ks.
Against Logan Allen.
Against Logan Allen, who's a lefty, which should be awesome for our lineup. And he's 5-6, 4.27 ERA with 60 Ks. So I like.
So Gavin Williams going to get Scooble.
Yeah,
Gavin Williams is a really good young pitcher.
I know.
And he's going to go up against Scooble. That's going to be a doozy of a game.
Yeah.
All three of these pitchers are gettable for us.
Yeah. Again, same message applies. Tigers need to win tonight like they usually win game one in the series. If they can continue the Saturday streak after last Saturday, after going, you know, close to 5 weeks without a Saturday win, or maybe it was even longer, keep that rolling along and then take our chance. You know, they just need to win one of the two and then take our chances with, the Scooble win. I'd be very happy from a division opponent that we can put some distance between ourselves.
If we keep Kwan and Ramirez from doing damage to us, I don't see how we don't take two out of three in this series.
Well, that was the preview that I saw that the Cubs executed, was not letting those guys do the damage. And they were on base a lot, but the problem was that nobody else was. So
the one game I'm the most curious about is tonight's, and seeing Reese Olson and how he does in his comeback.
Is he healthy or is he not?
Is the blister going to have lingering effects? Are we good? Are we able to throw the change with the grip we need to throw it with?
Yeah,
it'll be fascinating to see that. Our lineup is hot right now, though.
I know. And I know that I was a little harsh, but getting Matt Fierling back the second time has been a blessing. And it just seems that I can't point to him necessarily, but the entire lineup's functioning better, with the exception of Trey Sweeney and Jake Rogers, unless there's runners in scoring position. Then,
he's a master. I don't think you're going to see Trey Sweeney up there tonight.
I hope not.
Lineup tonight. I think you're going to get to see a decent lineup to lead this series off. I think they need wins here coming off that Nat series. I think you're going to see a good lineup cobbled together for this one. Go ahead. They are going up against a righty tonight. So their lefties will all be in there.
Yep. So what I was going to say was, the one really great part about this season, well, I think there's two things to the secret sauce that probably need mentioning just yet again. The Tigers don't let losing streaks develop. And so I think they're going to be all, to your point, Chad, I think we're going to see the best starting nine tonight. Let's hope Olson doesn't develop into an Anibal Sanchez, where these blisters become a career defining and debilitating ailment. And I think they come out hot. And then he made a gaffe over this past Nat series, but Joey Cora is our secret weapon. The first to third, second to home cannot be understated in any way, shape, or form, for the fact that the Tigers are manufacturing runs the way good teams should. And I saw a statistic, it was actually during a Cubs game, where the team that either homers first or out homers the other team in today's baseball wins close to 80% of the time. And that included last postseason. So I like the fact that our offense is clicking on all cylinders. Again, couldn't agree with you more. I thought we might be a little more divisive on the pitching, but I think it all depends on what we have to give up. But at this point, depending who it is, I'd be willing to give up somebody pretty substantial if it's the right party in return. So in advance of our trade deadline primer, I just had done a little research and came up with five names. And again, only one of these names would fall into the let's give up something of significance. Okay. The other four, I'm thinking that if the Tigers have to give up, a top 10 prospect, which I would consider significant, I don't think it's going to happen. This team values their prospects too much. And so I just wanted you to give a letter grade, A, B, C, D, given that nobody in the top 10 is going to be moved. We are going to absorb salary, but we're not absorbing our players that we're trading salary as well.
Anybody that's going to break my heart.
Yes.
We're absorbing all the salary. Okay.
Yes. Do you understand the rules of engagement?
I understand the rules of engagement. All right. Give me the first guy.
Kelsey Jansen, Angels.
Old, somewhat fat, not quite a closer anymore, but still effective and gets guys out.
Swing and miss guy.
Swing and miss guy. I give that a B return.
Okay. I was going to say... a B minus, but if we get a
minus. I was going to say a B minus. I was thinking B minus, but I was like, am I being rough on that? I mean, what can we really get?
Okay.
So I was, B minus. Let's go. B minus Kelsey Jansen.
All right.
I like it.
A name from the series that we just played, the Nationals, Kyle Finnegan. Last year of his deal.
A better return, considering all things being similar. We're probably gonna have to give up a little more for him. I don't think we're gonna get away with a, you know,
he's younger.
Top 25 guy. He's younger. We'd still only get him till the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. He's a rental.
Make nearly as much, so it wouldn't cost nearly as much. I would give that a B plus return.
I would as well. And he costs about half of what Jansen does. So
there you go.
All right. This all depends on how competitive the Red Sox stay, but Aroldis Chapman, what does he do for you?
I mean, Aroldis Chapman can be electric. And again, he's falling into that Jansen getting old and ineffective, or not as effective. I shouldn't say ineffective, not as effective as he once was, but still could be a great piece for the back end of the bullpen there, especially with postseason experience out the wazoo. I would give Aroldis, I'm going to say a B minus on him too, but could be a B. I would have a tough time if Jansen is at the best he can do right now versus Aroldis at the best he could do right now. Like, they could both be easily B to B plus, but they also could be B minus C plus.
Oh, I think so, they could easily be C minus as well. Yeah,
I'm going to give Aroldis a B minus. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's fair, and
I'm obviously not convinced.
No,
he could be a B.
But I think he's a C plus, and I also think that the Red Sox are going to be tough to deal with because they won't know until the day of the trade deadline.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that.
Okay.
Also, I don't know how much gas he has left in the tank and what his relationship is currently with the Boston media, which is always notoriously prickly. A couple more names for you, and now we're getting a little more interesting.
Okay.
Ryan Helsay, Cardinals.
I like Helsay a lot, and I would love to see a player of his caliber in our bullpen. I think he's a B plus. I'm giving him a B plus.
He's a B plus.
He hasn't had the best season this year that he's had in a while.
Change of environment?
But change of environment could be huge for him. So yeah, I go, hey, you know what? Tiger Stadium, probably a little bit more of a pitcher's park, right?
Oh yeah, then Bush, yeah.
Might help him out a little bit. I think he could be a big one. I think he could be somebody that could help us out a lot. As long as we could get him to revert to last year's version of Ryan Helsay, not this year. But yeah, I'd say he's a B plus, A minus guy.
This is the pie in the sky because he's still under control. It is a team that will trade, but they're solidly in it, and I don't see them falling out of it this year. This would be Pete Fairbanks of your Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, the Rays are rolling, and they've been doing pretty well, and I think they're going to be involved somewhat. I think he's got another year of control. I mean, he'd be a great get. He'd be an A-minus in my book.
Yeah,
if Mason Miller is an A, in my book, like, Pete Fairbanks is an A minus and real close. So I'd be real excited to have him. I think he'd cost us way too much. There's
I think
way
he would too.
Getting him for nothing.
Yeah.
And I think the Rays are going to hold on to him. Why are they getting rid of a Pete Fairbanks right now? Unless the haul is amazing.
The haul would have to be ridiculous. You'd have to back up the Brinks truck of prospects to do that.
I think what you're getting at here is get prepared for something at best along the lines of a Kelsey Jansen.
Aroldis Chapman,
something of that ilk. Maybe we get a Helsay, depending on how things are going in St. Louis.
They're playing well right now, too.
I know. I do. Like, it's really tough this early to determine who's going to be available and who isn't, who's a buyer and who's a seller. More teams are in it now, of course. That's by design, which is great for the fans and whatnot. But for the trade deadline, makes things really difficult.
Last question for you.
Okay.
Is also, if we did get one of the traditional closers, let's just say Jansen, we get it for a bag of balls, meaning low-level prospects in absorbing his somewhat bloated salary for what he's delivering to the Angels.
$10 million, yep.
What do you do with Will Vest?
I think Jansen sets up Vest.
Okay.
I don't think you pull Vest from... I think Vest is a... He's a bona fide closer. Now,
I
we're
going to
get
too.
Alex Lang back soon, so we'll see where he fits into the mix, too.
So then, as a result of this exercise, knowing kind of what's out there, I mean, those are five of the prominent names that I keep reading about. Doesn't mean they're actually being dangled, you know, front office do things cloak and daggerish all the time. That being said, outside of the two guys at the bottom of the list and Mason Miller, nobody really moved the needle that much for me. So at this point, I'd rather just sit and hold and deal with what we have and try to focus on starting pitching. Or
standpoint of the pen, we can do it, but we need starters. We need to do this exercise again with starters.
We'll do.
I'm going to have a
next
little
episode.
I'm going to have a different thought process around that than I am relievers. But this is a good exercise. This is a fun little game, but I don't know that any of those guys really moves the needle that much for me. If we're giving away nothing, I wouldn't mind having one or two of those arms in our pen, but we got to be giving up very little to get them.
Agreed. All right.
All right. Moving on.
Food real quick, Chet, as we always do.
Let's do it.
Yeah. One of the most delicious things I've ever had is a heart attack on a bun, and they call it a Polish boy, and it is exclusive to Cleveland. And essentially what it is a Polish sausage or kielbasa. Then they typically put pierogies on top of that.
That's unbelievable.
And then there is red cabbage, onions, sauerkraut, kind of whatever you want. Stadium mustard. I've seen barbecue sauce put on it. And then they top that all off with fries, a la what Pittsburgh does with a Primanti Brothers sandwich. It's absolutely fantastic. It is definitely not something to eat in your seat. It is something that you need two elbows on one of those, you know, metal stands somewhere in the ballpark. And to wash it down, I would say Great Lakes Brewery is probably my favorite brewery in Cleveland. Elliot Ness is a pretty good one. The Edmund Fitzgerald's a little dark for this time of the year, but it is very, very quaffable beer.
Do you find yourself staying away from the dark beers in the summer?
Absolutely.
I was somewhere recently and I watched a guy pull a stout out of a cooler.
Oof.
And we were running about 90 degrees.
Oof.
I was like, God have mercy. That's like, it's like milk.
No.
On a hot day. It's just horrible.
Yeah, couldn't do it. But you offer that in December and January.
Oh, it's lovely. That's
if we
nice.
Were in Cleveland,
just warms
sit,
it,
sit, sit
warms
down with a little
up.
Polish boy, a couple of those. Mm. Get your 2,500 to 3,000 calories right in one fell swoop. You're good to go.
So I'm fascinated by the pierogi and the dog. And you did see, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Joey Chestnut did win the hot dog eating contest again after sitting, I think, the last 2 years out. I think the nearest contestant was 20 dogs off.
Disgusting.
Holy
that you could be 20 dogs ahead of somebody.
Every time I watch this thing, I don't the concept is fascinating to me. How somebody can fit 70, he got 70 and a half hot dogs into his system. I don't know how you can fit, take all those hot dogs, pile them up on a table in front of you with bun and say, I'm putting all that in me. That sounds terrible.
Terrible.
I looked at him when he was done and he's sitting there just gasping for air. He looked like he's just like, oh, I got to get off this stage.
It's not that.
It's terrible looking. And so,
imagine the fat content.
I like eating, but my God have mercy.
I mean, Joey. How many nitrates and sodium he has floating through his bloodstream?
He's got to just go get rid of all that when it's over. But while I'm watching him stuff his face with these things, I'm kind of dry. I get the feeling in your throat where you're like, gosh, I feel like I might. And I just sat here and looked at this pierogi dog online, and I kind of got the same feeling again. I've had it two times in a day now. That thing's got more junk in there. Give me my hot dog wrapped in foil in my pockets of my shorts for me to sit down with, and I'm fine. And I don't want to think about Joey Chestnut while I'm eating it. I'll probably choke and die in the stands. At any rate, that's fascinating food for Progressive Stadium. Again, I don't know if it's a stadium I'm going to visit or not. I haven't figured that one out yet, but fascinating. Bill, what else do we have?
Nothing other than for you, I would say that the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, tradition as it is, has gotten too gluttonous for me to watch anymore.
I can't even that fast. I need a hot dog an inning is fine. Pace yourself. Not 70 and a half inside of whatever. It just looks like a train wreck happening, just jamming stuff into the old pie hole.
He's set the bar too high.
God, right.
That's all.
Anyhow,
I got. We're
Happy
done.
Fourth. I'm done. I can't talk about that anymore. All right. Have we hit everything? We got the food in there. We talked about the series. We brought you up to date on how awful the Washington Nationals series was. And we need pitching. That's today's theme. TLDR, we need pitching. The Nats are terrible, but still beat us. And now we're going to play a big series against Cleveland here before the All-Star break. What I would call a must-win of the first half, even though we're in the second half of the season so far. Anything else, Bill? that we want to cover.
Happy 4th. Right.
Happy 4th. Thanks for listening, folks. Until next time, go Tigers. That's going to do it for this episode of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're Bill and Chet, and we'll be back soon with more Tigers talk. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you got a minute, leave us a quick review. Till next time, go Tigers!